Today on The Grave Talks, two-way communication, a conversation with Bruce Halliday. Ghost box communication is one of the most common phrases you hear today in the world of spirit communication. Through several decades of research, Bruce Halliday has been one of the key players in developing and perfecting the practice of what is known widely today as ghost box communication. What are some of the proper ways to communicate with such a device, and what dangers has Bruce encountered along the way? Today, we take another conversation in time to dive into the world of ghost box communication and what the future holds for two-way communication with the dead. So we talk with Bruce Halliday.
Well, I mean, as far as the ghost box was concerned, I mean, when, you know, I was like one of the pioneers with ghost box communication.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing available at the time that I started was Frank Sumption had just begun. He just created the ghost box and he had just begun, you know, to build them. And no one had access to a ghost box. I mean, it was, you know, Frank was a great guy. He was a dear friend, but he was very eccentric. And he used to build a box and, he would build a box and he would turn the box on. And if the box said someone's name, if he heard someone's name come through or whatever, that person got the box. Okay, that's how he decided. He let them decide who the box was going to go to.
Yeah.
So, you know, before when I was first introduced to the concept of ghost box communication, there was nothing to do but manual sweep.
Sure.
Which was, you know, using an analog radio with a dial, you know, the old type radios that you used to turn the dial and the needle would go across the band, you know, to set your station.
Sure.
Yeah, there was no digital outread or anything like that. So what we used to do was we used to ask questions and then we would manually turn the dial from right to left and back again, you know, for about maybe 8 to 10 seconds, 12 seconds to allow for any type of communication that might come through. And that's how we were sweeping the dial manually by hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think at the time there was only myself and, you know, one or two other people that were even looking into doing, you know, sessions with a ghost box. There was a couple of early people that received ghost boxes from Frank, like Chris Moon was one of them. You know, and the couple of guys that had them, one woman had one that was a friend of his, got one of his original boxes, one of the first ones, never used it. And the other two guys used to do events and they used to, you know, like go to events with the box and they would do a live box session at an event and they would charge, you know, like they charge people to come and listen to this live box session.
Yeah.
So in essence, like it was a business to them. They didn't care about how it was working, why it was working, who they were communicating with, as long as they could use the box to, you know, for, you know, to do their show. You know what I mean? So, myself and one other individual got together and we said, okay, we both knew Frank. We started to communicate with Frank, you know, get in touch with him back and forth and, you know, talk to him, you know, butter him up a little bit, you know, to see if we could get one of these boxes. So eventually we did. I got Frank's box number 9, I think, or 10 was my first one. And it was like in the beginning when Frank first started making ghost boxes. I mean, I guess it was, you know, like anything else, it was a learning process. He would develop, you know, the boxes would develop as he went along. So the early boxes were really not that great. They didn't get great reception. They didn't get, you know, they were very noisy. The sweep was erratic. You know, it was very hard to get communication, but still in all, it was 1,000 times better than doing a manual sweep by hand.
Yeah.
You know? So I got my first Frank's box. I started to do sessions with that, and I started to document, you know, record and document the communication. Started to ask, you know, do sessions, what I call controlled sessions, which are sessions that are done by the operator in a controlled environment. A certain set of questions or a certain topic dedicated to that one session. The box is in an area where it's stable. It's getting good reception. You're able to get a good sweep and a good signal coming through. You have your recording devices set in one place. They're not moved around. There's nothing interfering with them. You try to put it in a spot where there's not too much outside interference like EMF or anything that's going to cause noise, static noise during the session. And that's you do a control session that way. You ask controlled questions that you're looking for specific answers to. You ask the question, you allow 8 to 10 seconds, maybe 12 seconds after you ask your question. You allot that amount of time for an answer before you ask your next question. Usually you don't want to go any more than that because anything that comes through further, like if I said, can you tell me what today is? What's today's date?
Mm-hmm.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, what is it?
Sure.
And
sure.
You go on, you allow like a whole minute, say you allowed a minute of box sweep to listen for that return. As the longer it goes between, the longer you allow after the question that you ask, the less relevant your answer is going to be less validating because it doesn't fall in direct proximity to the question that you asked.
Okay.
And usually when you're doing a box session, you're asking questions trying to converse back and forth. You don't sit for like 30 seconds after you ask a question. Mm-hmm. Like you'll ask hey, is anybody there that wants to communicate today? And you'll give it like if I was asking you, what I mean?
Yeah.
And you give it what you feel is an ample amount of time, that they need to answer the question, and then you go on to the next question. So you may get the answer to the first question after you ask the second question.
Yeah.
Which negates any relevance of that communication to the first question you asked. You know what I mean? So you want to try and keep your answers, keep the session controlled. So anyway, that's what we did. That's how I started to do actual research.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask questions along the lines of, how are they communicating? Where were they communicating from? Were they actually disembodied spirits of human beings? Why were they communicating with us? All questions based on finding out where this communication was coming from and who was sending it.
And so, there's obviously a lot of questions right there being asked who, what, when, where, and why. I mean, take me down that journey as you began to really start to experiment with it and try to find some of those answers.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what were you beginning to find? How were the dots coming together for you? What sort of, moments did you have of feeling, this is really, I'm really getting something here. This is really getting more and more intriguing. What sort of moments of doubt did you have? I mean, walk me through as you go through that, because I'm sure you have a little bit of all of that.
Moments of doubt, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, all rolled into one. But, it's overall, the experience you take a step back from and look back on and go, okay, wow, that was quite something.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of those experiences early on when you were digging into that.
Okay, in the beginning, I mean, it was the communication was very rudimentary. I mean, we were the couple of guys that started doing it, that had access to boxes. Let me preface that by saying this. Within 6 months of me getting my Frank's box, a gentleman called Joe Siapi had built a ghost box. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar, if you ever heard of the Joe's box.
I have heard of it. I'm not super familiar, but I have heard of it.
Right. We were friends with Joe Siapi, and the individual that I worked with in the beginning, he knew Joe Siapi well, and he actually collaborated with Joe on building this box. It was nothing like a Frank's box. I mean, of course, it was a sweeping radio, but it was a third of the size. It was a very simple operation. Frank used to build his radios. He used to build his circuit boards and sweep circuits and everything from scratch. I mean, he would take a bare circuit board and he would put all the circuits in, and he would, it was a big operation.
Sure.
Joe, I'm sorry.
I just said sure. I'm just agreeing.
Oh, okay. Joe Siappi would purchase a circuit board, say an AM/FM circuit board, and he would purchase a sweep circuit, and he would connect the sweep circuit to the circuit board and attach a sweep speed adjustment knob and put it in a small plastic radio case, and that was the Joe's box. Mm-hmm. So about 6 months after, when Joe first came out with his boxes, I think I had number three. Joe had number one. The guy I was working with that was good friends with him had number two, and I had number three. So now I had two different boxes to work with that actually operated. They operated the same. They were sweeping ghost boxes. They swept the radio dial, but they sounded and operated completely different. Mm-hmm. It was a different type of sweep. It was a different sounding sweep. The Joe's box was, I don't want to say, you know, I want to respect Frank Sumption and his accomplishment in the field, but the Joe's box put us one step ahead.
Sure.
Because we were able to get better communication with the Joe's box. So back in the beginning, like I said, it was very rudimentary, the communication. We were getting a lot of yeses and nos, you know, one or two word communications and a name here and there. You know, we weren't getting the type of communication that I get today. I mean, I actually got to the point now where I achieve what I call conversational communication, where there's a volley of communication, you know, that contains, 8, 10, 12, 15 words back and forth on a single subject, you know?
Yeah.
But back then, like I said, one or two word answers, you know, a name now and then, they would actually say my name. They would say the operator's name more frequently than anything else, just to let you know that, yes, they were aware of you and they were communicating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm sure in the early days, it was just as new to the entities on the other side that were communicating as it was to us, because they had never had these devices to work with before. So they were in a learning curve themselves. So over the course of time, you know, a couple of months, I was doing daily sessions, sometimes two a day, and which was a grind, because you would do a 15, 20 minute session, a half hour session, and then you would go, you know, you would go over the recording and you would pull the single files from the session, you know, but you had to listen to every, and you really had to listen to it. Sometimes you would have to listen to the same piece of audio, you know, four or five times to make sure you heard what you heard, you know what I mean? And then you would isolate that file, the question and the answer, and you would make a single file of its own. So to go through a 10 or 15 minute recording would take maybe four or five, six straight hours of record, you know, review.
Yeah.
And to pull out those files. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an easy process. And through the course of the best event that occurred in the beginning was I became aware of what we call technicians, which are some people might call them spirit guides. You know, I named them technicians because they actually work with the communication. So to me, they were like technical advisors. You know what I mean? But their job was a lot more than that. I mean, they a technician. You'll have anybody that uses an open ghost box. I'm not talking about apps and stuff like that, because an app is not, it doesn't open a free line of energy exchange. See, when you run a ghost box, when you turn a ghost box on, whoever's operating the ghost box, in order for the communication to be facilitated, it opens up a doorway. Mm-hmm. And the doorway opens to allow the passage of your physical energy to the other side, and the passage of their spiritual energy to our side, which works in tandem so that they can manipulate those fragments of sound to form the communication. So back in the beginning, I didn't know any of this. I mean, this is over years of research and experience that, you know, I learned these things.
Sure.
Sure.
So like I said, I became aware of, you know, every session I did, I was getting the same names that would come through. You know, I would say, hi, you know, at the beginning of every session, I'd say, hi, is there anyone there that wishes to communicate today? And I would always get the name either Mike or Lisa. Mm-hmm. And Mike always came through in a male voice. Lisa always came through in a female voice. All right. So after getting that, you know, I chalked that up in the beginning to just, you know, maybe those were the entities that, but I had no idea what a technician was or what their function was. So I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to make up a series of questions. I'm going to do a whole session just on the topic of who are Mike and Lisa. I want to find out who these individuals are and what why they're at every single session that I do. So I did that. And I gave them a preamp. You know, before I did the session, a couple of hours before, I would, you know, because they can hear us regardless. Mm-hmm. If you direct your mental energy, if you direct your cerebral energy to them, like if you have them in your mind and you speak out loud, they can hear you without the ghost box being on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've done experiments like that, you know, time and time and time again, where we'll ask a question, you know, an hour before we start the ghost box session, and when we turn the ghost box on, that's the first thing that comes through is the answer to that question.
But the main thing, and I want to ask this before we continue on about the technicians, the way that they can communicate back to you is it only through the ghost box as
yes.
far as we know right now?
Yes.
So let me ask you this, and then I want you to continue on. So I don't want to lose, don't lose your train of thought as to where we're at. But I do want to ask about this, the role of the technician. That's an interesting thing to think about and ponder, because these ghost boxes have only existed for so long. So would they on the other side had to have at some point made this realization or choice of, look, they have this technology, this piece of equipment now that we can communicate through. Who wants to be a technician? Were these people who may have been technically inclined in life?
And, some of them are now.
Okay.
Some of them are now. Frank Sumption works, you know, he's. Well, that's a story unto itself. Remind
sure.
me of that after I
okay.
finish what I was saying.
Okay.
I don't want to, you know, go from one subject to another
yes.
without finishing the last one.
Yeah. So,
okay. As far as technicians go, a technician's job on the other side is they facilitate the session and they're guardians of the gate. They try to make sure they try to keep everything under control. Like you can liken a ghost box to, if you went out into, say, your backyard in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
and you turned on a flashlight, all the bugs, moths, whatever, would be attracted to that beam of light.
Sure.
They would all come towards that beam of light. When you turn on a ghost box and your physical energy is presented on the other side, it acts as a beacon. And any entities that are in proximity to this gravitate towards that. And then they all want to talk at once. See, they deem that as an opportunity for them to get across whatever is the most important thing to them at that moment, you know, and they'll shout it out, like just to get that message through to the physical world. You know what I mean? So a technician's job is to keep order. You can ask for specific entities, like if you say you wanted to speak to your mom that passed away, or your brother, or you wanted to speak to, I've spoken to Thomas Edison. You know, you ask, you know, I say, hey, Mike, Lisa, if you guys can you bring this individual forward and have them communicate if it's possible? And they'll tell you, hold on or wait. And you'll ask again, okay, is that individual available to communicate? And they'll tell you he's coming or they're coming or whatever. Just hang on. And eventually you'll get that individual. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they not only act as a conduit, they oversee the door so that no entity, they try to stop entities from traveling through to our side while that door is open,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't always work. I mean, it does happen that entities do come through. They act as like a relay. Like if you did a session in a location, say you went to, just off the top of my head, Gettysburg,
sure.
you said, right? And you did a session at Gettysburg and you got an individual to come through, you know, and you really had a good session and you got the individual's name and you know that they, you know, that's the entity you were speaking to. And then you did a controlled session at your home. You could actually ask your technician to relay your communication to that entity at Gettysburg and then relay their communication back to you during that session.
Okay.
They can't bring them forward because entities at locations, 99.9% of the time, the communication you're getting at a location, the so-called haunted location,
yeah.
is communication that's coming from an earthbound or grounded entity that's there at the location. It's not coming from the other side.
Okay.
So they, if for you, they can't, your technician can't go and bring them forward to the point where whatever point they're at facilitating this ghost box communication in this mm-hmm. session. So they have to actually communicate with that entity in the location they're in and then relay the communication back to you. So they have a tough job. I don't envy them over there. I mean, it's a lot to control at one time. You know, and sometimes they'll get disgruntled. Like if I'm impatient and I ask a question and I don't feel that I got the answer quick enough, I'll ask it again and again and again. Or if I didn't hear the answer live in real time, because we only hear about 20-25% of the communication during a session live. The rest of it you have to find and review of the recording.
Okay.
So if I didn't hear something in real time, you know, and I'm asking the question over and over again, they'll get annoyed. You know, and they'll tell you. They'll say, oh, you know, come on, hold on. You know, we're doing our best. Take it easy, you know. So, you know, they actually have, you know, they have to deal with me or whatever operator is, you know, in the physical operating the session. And they have to deal with the chaos that's going on that side. You know what I mean? And then they have to deal with the operator's request of trying to find a specific entity that, you know, who knows how they have to look for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a tough job being a technician.
Yeah.
But I appreciate them, very much.
It's such an interesting concept. And one of the ones that I've heard this year that, you know, one of those few moments I get a year on this where it's like, I haven't heard that one before. But I've brought it up in several other conversations now because I find it so fascinating. This idea and this concept that this is, and it makes sense. What were technicians doing? I mean, in your opinion, in your experiences prior to this technology existing, did they have another role of trying to help with the communications? And now this is just kind of where they tend to go.
Not that they've told me, but because there's a steadfast rule mm-hmm. in any spirit communication. They're only allowed to give us certain types of information. And no matter how many times you ask a question, or no matter how many different ways you pose that question, you're not getting the information. That's it.
Why is so, that? Why do they only have essentially a firewall of some sort of what they can
tell you? They do not relay that information. They just tell you no. Can't answer, won't answer, or whatever the response may be at the time.
What's your opinion?
Excuse me?
What's your opinion on why? I mean, I know you don't, you never have got an answer on that, but if you were to guess, do you have an opinion? Do you have a thought on why that is?
In my opinion, the reason is that there's us being in the physical and able to manipulate situations here. I don't think that, I think that there's some information that they can give us that we may feel is benign. That may lead to another incident. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel that the information that they deny us is information that would only get us in trouble. You know what I mean? Or cause some sort of problem.
They're looking out for us.
Right. So they tell you, you know, they just tell you, no, not getting it. You know, sure. That's it. So sure. Move on. You know, so that's what we do. You know, whenever I hear, when I ask a question and I hear that and I hear move on or you know, no or not, no answer or whatever, that I just go on to the next question or the next topic.
Yeah,
you know,
you respect it. And do you ever have the situation where you may be asking a question, you can't get the answer that time, you can't get the answer out of several sessions? Do you ever go back to questions that you feel were just not answered or very tough for them to answer to see if you get
and they're not, I mean, like over the years I still have the same two technicians today 15 years later that I started with, Mike and Lisa.
Sure.
So we've developed that in actual friendship, you know what I mean? And you know, they'll hear, you'll get something that's akin to a laugh. Like if you bring up, if they tell you concisely no, you're not getting that answer, and two sessions later, you ask the same question, but you know, pose it in a different way, mm-hmm. they'll laugh at you, you know? Like, hey, man, come on, man, what do you think, I'm stupid? You're not getting that answer.
Sure.
You know,
have you ever tried to dig into who Mike and Lisa were?
Yes. Mike, no information at all. Will not divulge where he was, what era he lived in, what, you know, what he did in the physical world, or doesn't divulge that information. Mm-hmm. Mike is kind of like the strong silent type. Okay. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Now Lisa, on the other hand, she's a chatterbox. She likes to talk, you know. She'll butt into conversations. She'll, you know, into messages. She'll actually step on somebody else's message to get her own opinion across, you know. So she, you know, she was in the 30s and 40s. She lived in the 30s and 40s. And as far as I can gather, the best I could piece together from different messages that I did receive from her, mm-hmm. She died of a disease in the late 40s. She died of a disease in the late 40s, and she was alone when she died. So that's all I got.
That's as basic of information as you got. I'm sure that you've run this through your mind, how fascinating it would be to be able to actually get an ID, a last name or something, you know, and then be able to go back and go, yeah, and talk to somebody and go, yes, that was my aunt, and she had this personality or whatever like that, just to really pull that.
I mean, I thought of that 1,000 times. I mean, you know, that's like a constant thought, you know. And I ask them all the time. I ask, well, Mike, I know I'm not going to get it out of, but Lisa, I always ask her. I say, you know, Lisa, can you give me your last name on, you know, and she just, either won't answer or just, you know, she'll say something like popcorn or something like that. You know what I mean?
Where that she's screwing with you. Yeah.
In other words, no, you're not getting it, you know? So.
Yeah.
That's
interesting. We also, the technicians, when we close down a session, a lot of people don't realize this, and I see this all the time. I mean, there's so many people out there that are buying hack radio boxes on eBay. They're using phone apps, but a phone app is not bad because a phone app doesn't actually open a direct line of communication. So it's not a factor, but a hack radio will, a hack ghost box will. And, you know, the custom boxes and stuff and the portals that these people are using, you know, these devices that every Tom, Dick and Harry comes out with, they open this doorway. Now people are doing sessions with them that have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they'll actually just do a session and then abruptly shut when they're finished, which is really disrespectful. When they're finished, they just turn the box off, you know, without any regard, without any gratitude, without saying, you know, thank you for your communication or thank you for your help or whatever. You know, I always say, you know, we have to assume that we're speaking to entities that were once physical human beings. So, and I can tell, you know, you can tell by anybody that does ghost box sessions for more than a couple of times, you can tell that they still carry an emotion. They still carry a sense of humor. They still carry an intellect. You know, you're not dealing with an inanimate object. A lot of people look at ghost box communication as they're communicating with the actual box, that they're not communicating with an entity that's in an ethereal plane that's communicating through that box. They treat it like the box is talking to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they have no regard, no manners as far as that goes. And they'll just abruptly shut a box down. And it not only is that disrespectful, it's dangerous. Because, like I said, it opens a doorway. If an entity was to escape the control of the technician, which does happen, it's happened to me numerous times, and makes it through that portal, it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative entity. It doesn't have to be a demonic entity. It can be just an average, you know, benign entity that just happened to travel through that portal to our side. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you close out a session, at the end of the session, you ask your technician, you say, you know, like I say, Mike, Lisa, any entities that may have come through the box during the session or come through to my side, can you please bring them back, have them return, and let me know when it's safe to shut down? And you have to wait for that verbal confirmation. You cannot just, you know, say, you know, let me know when it's clear to shut down and then wait 10 seconds and shut the box. You have to get that verbal confirmation. and for you to use a ghost box and for you to attempt communication with the other side, and then some responsibilities come with that, you know? And I mean, you have to do it the right way. And 99.9% of the people that I see doing ghost box sessions out there today are not doing anything. They're not following. I mean, I actually put these protocols. I developed a basic way to do a ghost box session, and I developed these protocols years and years and years ago, and actually put them into effect. And somewhere along the line, over the years, they just got tossed aside, or, you know, well, I guess when ghost boxes, when the hack boxes and these custom boxes that are being built by, you know, numerous individuals now became available to the general public, you know, anybody like, Josie Housewife would say, oh, you know, I'm going to buy a ghost box, you know, and she would, you know, buy an SB7 off eBay and then, you know, sit down in her kitchen having coffee and turn the thing on and not do any research into, you know, what am I getting into? How should I do this? What are the dangers? What, you know, how should I correctly do it? No, they just turn it on, turn it off, and use it like, you know, like it was a party favor. You know what I mean?
Well, is that part of it? I mean, I'm sure, I mean, you can... We can understand the area where someone who just doesn't inform themselves on it and they buy it on a whim and like, let's see what it does. And most people don't read instructions. And if they're not really into this world of paranormal, they may not have any education or knowledge on it. But do we have that other sect of individuals? Is there a group that uses the ghost box that doesn't subscribe to your belief of the technicians?
Well, I haven't come across anybody yet that's a ghost box or a live spirit practitioner, live spirit communication practitioner that doesn't believe in technicians.
Okay, so that's not the thing then. It's it's not a we don't believe that, we don't get that. Is it more of an area then of we just simply lack the respect?
Well, let me not say that there's nobody out there.
Okay.
I'm assuming that there's a couple sure. of people out there that, sure. that, you know, there's always a couple in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, that might say, well, there's no such thing as a technician. Whenever you turn it on, whoever's available to speak, speaks. You know, but that's not true. It's absolutely not true. And if you were to do ghost box sessions on a regular basis and you were to ask for a technician or if you were to ask, you know, about a certain individual, a certain name that you hear coming through consistently mm-hmm. through each one of your sessions, you would find out that that was your technician. You know what I mean?
I see. So, yeah. So if it's something that really you're saying anyone who would start to use a ghost box without much experience with it, if they could understand the basics of operation of how this thing works, who you're communicating with, the lines of communication of to get from point A to point B to point C, this is kind of how you have to work it, then right. it's safer, it makes more sense. Are people not following those protocols out of ignorance, or is it, you know, laziness or lack of respect?
Well, I don't think it's blatant disrespect. I don't okay. think they have the intent for disrespect.
Okay.
I think it's a little bit of ignorance and a little bit of laziness.
Okay.
That, you know, I mean, you have to actually, when you're ready, like most people that I see today, when they're done doing a ghost box session, I mean, they're the only thing that's important. So when they're done, they're done. You know what I mean? And they want to turn that box off immediately. They don't want to take the extra step or wait the extra couple of minutes to get that verbal confirmation or to shut the session down safely. It's too much trouble. So they just shut the box off and figure everything's okay. You know how many messages I get from people that say, oh, I did a ghost box session recently, a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had an individual contact me from Ireland.
Okay.
Right? His girlfriend bought him a hack box for his birthday, mm-hmm. right? So they were sitting around. It was a Saturday night. They were sitting around having a couple of drinks in the apartment and decided to turn this hack box on. So when they did, they kept the hack box. They kept the session going for an inordinate amount of time. I mean, like an hour and a half, which is ridiculous because, I mean, I could get into that, you know, I could get into a theory that I came up with called phase transition that'll tell you that anything over 20, 25 minutes in a ghost box session is useless.
Okay.
And, you know, it has to do with energy fluctuations that build, peak, and then decline. But not to get off the subject.
Sure.
This individual messages me at like 11 o'clock at night. And he says, listen, can you help me? He said, he explained the situation. And he said, the ghost box is still running. He says, and things are going on in my home. You know, dish came off the counter, broke on the floor. Two light bulbs burned out. My doorbell is ringing on its own. You know, so I said to him, I said, you know, you have most likely an entity came through while the ghost box was in session. Now, I had to explain this whole thing to this individual. I had to explain all of everything that it was about. And while I'm doing this, the session is continuing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I said, listen, ask for a technician. Wait for somebody to give you a yes or no answer or whatever the case may be. Wait for an answer. When you establish that you have a technician or someone that's overseeing the session, then you ask them, tell them that you're having a problem with an entity that came through the box. Can they retrieve them and bring them back? He said, okay, I'll get back to you. Now, back and forth, this went on until 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So finally, I stayed on Messenger with him while he closed out the session. He said the activity stopped. He said he did get the yes, that there was a technician there that was overseeing the session. So I said, now, before you shut that box off, now remember, the box is in operation now for like 3-4 hours.
Yeah. Okay?
So I said to him, before you shut that box off, now you have to hear. You can't just ask for confirmation, assume you got it, and shut the box. You have to hear them say, yes, it's clear. It's okay to shut down. You're going to hear either yes, okay, clear, or whatever. That's something positive, you know, a positive answer is going to come through to allow you to shut that box off. So he did that, you know, and he was lucky enough to get that, you know, positive response. He got an okay in like, you know, within 10, 15 seconds of asking the question. So I said to him, okay, you can shut the box and that's it. So he shut it off. And I said to him, I said, listen, I have documents and articles that I've written, published, everything. I said, I'm going to send me your email and I'll send you the basic information, the documents and articles that I wrote that'll give you a basic knowledge of what you're doing so you don't get into this problem again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. And I never heard from the guy again, so I'm assuming everything turned all right. Turned out all right with the guy.
And probably he never turned that thing on again.
Yeah, right, exactly. I've had individuals, you know, I've had it happen to me personally. You know what I mean? You can't, you know, from what I can gather, it becomes so chaotic sometimes on that side with so many entities rushing the box and wanting to communicate at one time that the technician sometimes gets overwhelmed and he can't be in every single spot at every single second.
Sure.
So, you know, an entity may be able to cross through, you know what I mean? So I've had it happen to me on numerous occasions, not in the past, I would say 10 years, because as it happened and I redid a session, you know, started to see activity, you know, in my home, you know, sometimes very slight, a couple of times it was more, you know, more severe, but you know, that led me to believe, okay, something is going on. Now, I haven't been to any locations where I would have brought an entity back with me that would have attached to me or something like that. So let me turn on the ghost box, do a session, and find out what's going on. So through those experiences, I actually found out about entities being able to come through this doorway. That led me to formulate the protocol of doing a close, you know, how to do a closing of a ghost box session. And I wrote up a whole document about it. And I posted it everywhere so that everyone would be able to read it and utilize it.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Bruce Halliday in part two. Why is it that technicians who help us communicate on the other side seem to be disrespected by many people who use a ghost box on this side? And what are the dangers in doing so? What are the dangers of keeping an exceedingly long ghost box session going? Could a ghost box bring spirits back into their own dimension? And what if you don't get a response from your technicians to turn off the ghost box? Is there ever technicians on the other side with negative intent? Could someone create a haunting by opening a ghost box and not turning it off? And how did the communication evolve into conversation over time for Bruce. We're going to talk about all that and more as we continue in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. You can sign up to do that at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to all of our episodes, part one and part two in their entirety, hundreds of them right there for you to binge away on. We do that to keep our show on the air. Without the support, we could not put on this level and quality of a show that we do for you every single week. So we greatly appreciate your support in allowing us to do that by becoming a Gravekeeper at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.